Hey, everybody, this is Brad Gillis from Night Ranger, and you're checking out Focus on Metal right here with Richie and Scott. You're going to love it.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
Yep, back in the studio for yet another episode of that, which we like to call Focus on Metal. And see if we can get this one out to you guys. We're in a little tight time frame now. We get March going into April. I got a Vegas trip to see Scorpions. There's a billion concerts in April, too. But Richie wanted to get an episode out to you guys. He's got some great topics. And so we're going to have one of those Focus on Metal discussion episodes, and hopefully at some point in the next few weeks as well, we'll have a nice chat with Brian Heaton to talk all about the brand new Queensryche touring history book that he put out, and I've been able to read it. It's pretty awesome. If you're a Queensryche fan, there's lots of good stuff in there. Incredible pictures as well. Even if it's a case of you don't want to read it cover to cover, it's one of those books that you could just sit on the coffee table and grab it and go, hey, you know, I wonder about this show or I wonder about that show. So good stuff. You can head up to, what is it, NW Metalworks?
I believe so, yeah.
With an X, and pre-order that still as well. But like I said, hopefully we'll have a chat with Brian coming up soon. But right now, having a chat with Richie. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Wet. But I'm here. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, it is.
There's a lot been going on the last couple of weeks in the hard rock and metal world. So I wrote down a couple of topics. If we get to them all in the time slot allowed, we get to them. If we don't, we don't.
This is called Surprise the Idiot with Topics. And Richie's got the topics. I'm the idiot. So yeah, here we go.
Scott already discussed one of them off air that we could probably get into. But, well, I don't know what if you want to talk about that, the tickets.
Oh, that's just, yeah. We're going to the show in me and my girlfriend are going to the show in Vegas for the Scorpions residency. Grab the first weekend show. Figure it's the second show in. I don't want to go any further than that because they're all getting old. Klaus has an amazing voice, but you never know. He's coming back from back surgery and all that. And I thought I don't want to chance it anywhere past the second show. So the deal is though is I got physical tickets and they're still not in my hands. And, you know, you buy the tickets. It says, hey, well, we'll send them out 4 weeks before the show. I hit up Ticketmaster, and I'm informed they haven't even been printed yet. So who knows if I'm going to be hopping a plane to Vegas with the inability to get into the show I'm going out there for. So, yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Kind of?
Yeah,
that's the whole reason you're going.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
And I'd say the tickets aren't cheap either.
They're not. We got awesome seats, assuming we can get to sit in them, and early entry and all that, and you know, plus Nikki's short, and so for me, you know, I stand at a show. Same with you. We kind of see over everybody.
Early entry, you might be getting the no entry tickets.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting rear entry out of this, but yeah, Nikki's short, and so I've got basically a first row of a section right after the orchestra pit. So there's pretty much, even with standing, there's going to be nobody in front of her, which is great. So, yeah, I was happy to get the seats. Hopefully, like I said, I get to sit in them. But right now, I'm feeling like Ticketmaster sucks. It's unbelievable. And the thing is, what I told the guys I was working with is, you got people going to the first show, and if they've bought these tickets, they have no idea they're already screwed. Because there's no way they're going to get their tickets on time.
Now, you said they're special tickets, right?
Yeah, they're special tickets, yeah.
Okay.
And, I don't think I will ever do this again. I'm going to go back to just the digital. But even the digital ones, they do now. So I look through all the tickets that I've already got bought on Ticketmaster for this year. And, you know, some of them, the tickets right there. So like Satriani next Friday, tickets are available, no problem, ready to go. Then I look at my Priest tickets and they're, you know, won't be available till 15 days. It's a digital ticket. Like,
that makes zero sense.
It's ridiculous. It should be like, if you buy the friggin' ticket, the ticket should be available to you. Yeah, it's crazy.
Maybe you have to pay an initial fee to get the tickets immediately.
Because they don't have enough fees already. Yeah. Right. They'll have their get what you bought fee. Yeah. Yeah.
Just because we can fee.
They suck.
Round up fee.
Anyways, what else you got?
Let's talk about the two big releases that have come out.
Sure.
First one we're going to do is we'll talk about the Bruce Dickinson record.
Okay, let me wander over and get it.
All right, so this is the Mandrake Project. It's been 22 years since Bruce released a solo album,
yeah.
Tyranny of Souls, and he has this history with Roy Z, who was back for this record.
Yeah.
Of course, Bruce has been really busy in between with doing all these Maiden records and flying planes and
yeah.
and all that shit.
Dancing, but cancer.
I've been waiting for a Dickinson album for many, many, many years. I think his solo work is underrated.
Uh-huh.
I think The Chemical Wedding is probably one of the best records I think he's ever done.
Yeah. I was gonna say that would have been my other one too, yeah.
Yeah, or An Accident of Birth is very strong. Mm-hmm. But the solo albums that he did are pretty varied.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that this wasn't going to be a straight up metal album.
Yep.
And I would liken this a little bit to, does it sound like Maiden because he's singing? Yes, it does. But I think on the edges, it's more varied. When it's ambient, it's really ambient. There's lots of piano, lots of acoustic guitar.
Yep.
And when it's dark and heavy, it's very heavy, heavier than Maiden.
Yeah, I would say my opinion, probably side one is probably the most Maiden-like.
Yeah.
With a tinge of when Adrian's involved in the songwriting. The other thing, too, is that I hate when they do this, but I hate when the labels on the albums don't have a goddamn side one, side two, something. So there is nothing on either side of the label. So because sometimes
this is the vinyl?
Yeah.
I haven't got the vinyl.
Because sometimes even on the vinyl, right, you might see that it's got, maybe it's got nothing on one side, but you flip over the other and it goes, oh, this is
other
this
side
is
and this side. Yes,
but
yes.
This one, there's nothing on the other side. So you got the little inking thing on one side and you got the thing on the other side. So what did I do? I'm like, okay, well, song count was relatively simple. It was relatively close, 1 to 2. So I put it on. And so I start listening to this and I'm just doing stuff and I've got it going. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Wrong way around.
Because I put side two on first.
So you had the Book of Souls opening track.
Which
was the first one.
It was like, this is a downer. It was just,
yeah.
And I'm just thinking, why did I buy this? Because, you know, I've got the single. The single has the Afterglow and
of Ragnarok. Sit out a few points.
And it's also got the demo of Eternity Has Failed, which is called If Eternity Should Fail. So I was kind of like psyched about this, and I get this, and then I screw up the side, and I'm just like, this is freaking horrible. And I mean, I was really disliking it and thinking, why did I get this? And this is the this one's the signed one too, and I was just like. And like I said, it's easy to mix it up because you look and you get on the vinyl, you get on the first disc, this three on one side, three on the other side. So you look at them and you're like, okay, you choose at least the second one.
Oh, it's double vinyl.
Yeah. The second one.
Oh, I didn't know it was double. So there's
three
no,
on one side.
So there's no song titles on either of the vinyls.
No. And you know, at least though, the second disc, because you have all of side four is the one single song.
Yeah.
At least you can tell that one apart. And I was kind of joking to myself too when I put the second one on. I'm like, at least I won't fuck this one up, because you can definitely tell. But yeah, side two, I could do without. And what's funny is really, I could do without side two. I could do without side four. If I just had side one inside three, I think I'd have actually a pretty decent album. You can see here's the how they divide out.
Okay. I'm looking at the vinyl here.
Although, what I will say is...
Where's it signed? An insert?
Is an insert, yeah.
Yeah, an insert in signed vinyl, sorry, is not signed vinyl.
I will say that when I first saw that last song, and I was, what the hell? I was absolutely not looking forward to even hearing it. So I will admit that when all was said and done, it was, wow, that went by much quicker than I thought it would. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But I really like side one. I think side three is still very commercial as well. I could absolutely do without side two.
Yeah. So what Scott's talking, alluding to here, side two is Resurrection Men, Fingers in the Wounds, and Eternity Has Failed. What do you think of his version of Eternity Has Failed compared to the Iron Maiden version on Book of Souls?
It just seems really, I don't know how to describe it, dirgy maybe on this?
It's heavier.
It's just plodding?
I don't think it's as plodding as the Maiden version.
I don't know, maybe I'm not listening to it right, but I just...
Great guitar solo from Gus G on it.
I think the other part of it was that probably when I got to that last song on that side, I was already at that point done with the album. Till I put the real side one on, and I was like, oh, okay. This is kind of now it's redeeming itself.
Hmm. But what sort of record did you think you'd get from him?
So I knew that there was going to be a concept type of stuff on there, and I knew that it was going to have some type of religious themes. So that wasn't unexpected. And Bruce has always pulled in various things on all of his albums. So I was thinking it was going to even be something really different than Maiden, which wouldn't have surprised me if it had been, you know?
Some of it is very different to Maiden.
It is, but I just...
Especially the mellower stuff. You can't, other than, I can't think of the name of the song, the very last song on Dance of Death, the ballady one, other than that, I don't think Maiden have done a song like that, and there's some stuff on this album like that.
Yeah, but I think even on that second side too, the other thing that I was... When I, listening to Resurrection Man, if I hadn't known I was listening to Bruce Dickinson, I wouldn't have been able to actually go, oh, yeah, that's Bruce Dickinson. It just didn't even, it was like, not even really utilizing his, I mean, he's in tune and all that, but it's like.
I think he sings great on this.
It just didn't seem like he had a good melody for it and stuff. Mm. I don't know. But like I said, love side one, love
now,
side three.
The live show he's doing soon.
Yeah,
I hope he doesn't play any Maiden stuff. I hope all he does is his solo stuff. And it wouldn't surprise me if that's all he does.
Yeah.
I personally don't think he's going to do any Maiden material.
And people will bitch about it.
Yes, they will bitch.
But the thing is, he's got enough catalog. It's a small catalog, but he has enough catalog that he could easily do all his own stuff.
Yeah, and he hasn't... When is the last time he toured solo?
I can't remember.
Did he tour on Tyranny of Souls? I don't think he did.
I don't remember.
I think he probably... It wouldn't surprise me if his last solo show was before he joined Maiden.
Mm. But it's, yeah, I like I said, it, I think I would much rather go and see him doing all solo stuff.
Well, me too.
Than Maiden. And I've already got tickets for Maiden anyways for this year. So
me too.
You know.
Me too. So let's jump on to Judas Priest's Invincible Shield.
Oh, boy.
I have the vinyl of this, and I went to Target and I bought the extra three studio tracks.
Yeah.
What do you think of it?
Well, let's put it this way. So over there, there's a pile on the right. That's not Priest on the top shelf. And then there's the pile on the left. That's all Invincible Shield.
One, two, three, four, five, six.
That doesn't include this one because this one's not over there either.
Seven, eight vinyl copies. They're not all different, are you? Didn't get different colors
different,
and shit.
Yes.
Ah, you're mad.
And actually, we have nine because there's also a limited edition of 300 of them. That one is over at Nikki's house. And I've got the Target CD, and I have incoming the Japanese SA CD, the other bound book CD, and another, I want to say, 9 versions are inbound.
Hold on while I ring the men in white coats to take my co-host away. That's fucking madness. So they're all different color vinyl. You see, when...
And don't forget the special Metal Hammer edition.
Oh, the Metal Hammer edition. So, Rob Halford, I think Scott's probably paying your mortgage for the month on your house. Holy shit. So I'm looking at him here, so I've got...
That's a double picture disc.
Double picture disc.
Okay.
So this is black vinyl.
Now you got to realize that there's
purple vinyl.
There's 6 EU versions. Okay. There are 6 US versions.
I hope you're not going to say the album shit then.
No. There are 6 Japanese versions.
Wait a minute, you got 2 hot pink vinyl.
Yeah, that's I've already bitched at a seller for that.
Heavyweight red vinyl.
Yep.
Heavyweight blue vinyl. And alternate artwork, heavyweight black vinyl,
yeah,
with 3 bonus tracks on the 7-inch vinyl.
So,
I think you're fucking crazy.
So the other thing
hold on, before we get into this, right? Before we get into this, right? 1, 2, 7, 8. I'm going to say $400.
More than that. So, the other thing to note is you can see how the spines are all different.
Yeah.
So when you have all 6 of the European versions, you'll get the Judas Priest logo and the Shield logo on the side. Same with the US, and they are different.
They should be giving you a free fucking ticket to go see this show.
So I've still got the rest of the European versions coming in. 3 more Japanese, because there's 2 I haven't been able to locate. There's also the pink US version, which I haven't been able to locate. So those are outstanding. But then I've also got the holographic version coming in, of which there's only 2,000 of those.
Why? Right? Why?
Because... Because I collect vinyl.
Okay. I'm good with the 1 vinyl version and the Target with the 3 bonus tracks. I feel inadequate now.
I've been a long-time Priest fan. Okay?
No, and so am I, but I'm not as OTT as you.
And you see that I've got other ones up there, like under the Satriani poster. I have a whole set. That's a whole set of the Maiden catalog that the spine basically makes a Maiden artwork.
Okay.
I've got the same thing for a Priest catalog one that's under the TV. I had a Saxon one that the ex-wife won't give up. I like when I'm able to collect those kind of things. This is one of those opportunities, especially as a metal fan. These aren't going to come along very much for me.
Did you get the insert that's signed?
Yes.
Okay.
So, on the European Purple Edition. And all of these will, I know, appreciate dramatically. Because once the initial of people that bought multiple copies and sold them off, then all of a sudden... the marketplace is going to deplete, and these will go up in value.
Okay.
Without issue. I know that.
All right. What do you think of the record? Hold on. He's putting all this shit back. All this good stuff back.
Yeah, so I was very, very happy, obviously, because I wouldn't have bothered to continue to buy versions. But, yeah, it was everything I was hoping it would be. You know, the last couple ones they've done have been good. This didn't disappoint. They didn't go in some weird left field turn like they did with
Nostradamus
or anything like that. There isn't a bad song on here. And it's just really, really well done. I was extremely happy when I just with the first spin, I was like, this is freaking awesome.
It's a strong record.
It is.
I thought Firepower was very strong.
Yeah.
But one of the things you'll see, with especially when an iconic band like Judas Priest, people don't react when it comes out, they overreact. Oh, this is the best thing they've done, and you know, just pisses over everything that they've done since British Steel, and with the thing's only been out 3 days. You know, come back to me in 6 months.
You know, like, obviously, you know, I still like a lot of the older Priest catalog, but I've also had bands that have always been dear to me, like Aerosmith, as for an example, that the latter half of their career is more of a, you know, pop based type of stuff. It's kind of ignoring a lot of the hard rock roots and what the Blue Army was for and everything else. And so there's a lot of that stuff that's missing. But Priest, you know, they occasionally lose their way, but then you have the albums like this that come back and you realize that they're still 100% in it. And I think part of that too is, you know, having Richie come in and, you know, that kind of that fresh blood infusion as well, which I think definitely helps. But I think just overall, this is just a very, very solid release.
I think Richie Faulkner has a huge influence on that band now.
And the other thing is, this isn't like, you know, one or two good tracks and then the remainder of the album is filler either. It's nothing like that.
No, it's
front to back.
It's a strong Judas Priest,
you know,
record.
It harkens back to something like, you know, the example you gave, like British Steel. I mean, British Steel is a great release from beginning to end.
Mm.
And this is the same thing. There's no filler on this.
Yeah. One thing I will say is it wouldn't surprise me if it came out that Glenn Tipton hardly played anything on the album, that Richie played the vast majority of the guitars on it, because with Glenn's disease now, and he's in his, what, he's 73, 74.
Yeah.
And he's come out on stage a couple of times, which is great to see.
Yeah.
That's why I said I think Richie has a huge influence on this band now, because I think that he's playing the majority of the guitars on this.
Yeah.
I don't know how involved Glenn is in the writing, but it wouldn't surprise me if Richie's heavily involved in the writing as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely think so.
And maybe even Andy is playing some of the guitars.
And I was going to say, Andy, I think Sneap, there's also going to be a stuff that's been contributing by Andy, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he's a great producer, but he's also a really freaking good guitar player.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing I will say about this record, and I'm going to allude to Saxon and Accept with this, because Andy Sneap produces all of them.
Yeah.
I think it wouldn't be out of place if any of those singers actually sang on either album, either the other band's albums, because of the way he has them sounding.
Oh.
I think the bands sound similar anyway, but Andy Sneap has a sound.
Oh, yeah.
And he has the sound for Saxon, and that's more similar to Priest, that's similar to Accept. And
yeah,
you're going to have a Saxon album, a Priest album, and an Accept album,
I think,
all released within 4 months.
It is heavier, though. I think he's been able to retain that kind of Teutonic edge, even with an American singer on Accept stuff. I think he's done that really well. And I still think that sounds different enough from these. I think the other thing that we have to consider is that both Biff and Rob are much older now.
They're 70s
and
plus.
So they can't do all that high stuff they used to. So they're also just naturally...
Mark Cornello is 70.
Yeah.
He must be close to it.
But he's also not really doing a lot of that really high stuff that...
He's more
the other guys used to do.
What's the raspier?
He's got more of a growl to his
growl.
Voice. He's got that Brian Johnson thing going.
Yeah.
So I think you also just have that tonality of Biff and Rob has gone down, and that probably does add a little bit of that oneness too.
Mm. No, I like the last Accept record, and it's only really Wolf now and Mark.
Yeah.
I will say that the first single from the new album, is it Humanoid?
Yeah.
First single didn't really do it for me.
Mm.
I'm interested to see what the album is like, because I do really like a lot of the Mark Tornillo Accept stuff.
Oh yeah,
especially early on.
Yeah,
the first couple of albums.
The first couple ones were
like, super.
You know, you heard like what Teutonic Terror was like. Holy crap, this is a freaking great song.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I love those.
Mm.
But I think Priest did good. I also like that. It's gone back to a real Priest-like cover too. That. You know, Firepower definitely had those elements of it, and this just kind of
it's a good album cover.
On.
It is a good. There's like nine vinyl versions there. I can look at them all.
Well, there's the alternate covers are in there too. So there's an alternate cover, and all the other ones are, you know, really the same. The only difference being is that, you know, the Japanese release is going to have
some bonus tracks on the Japanese release. Studio tracks.
No,
that's unusual for Japan.
And that's because it's the same masters as the European version. But it will, the CD, though, does have different bonus tracks on it.
Right, right.
So.
All right. So let's jump on to the next topic. Focus! So the next topic, so Kerry King comes out with his solo band, Mark Ozzy Gueda,
which I've already
is going to be the singer, and then Slayer announced that they're playing shows later this year, 5 years after their farewell.
I'm like, what do you mean Slayer's coming out of retirement? What the fuck?
I told you years ago that it wouldn't surprise me. None of these bands go away. None of them.
I am in intense pain, Tinky.
Yeah, I mean... You got to wonder, like, where that's coming from. Is it a money need? Is it that Gary is like, fuck, I still want to play. We can't stop. Like, I just got here, and
he didn't want to stop.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, you know, is it Gary that's the impetus behind it? Or?
Reading some of the news reports, it was Tom Araya's wife, who probably looked at her purse and said, "It's not heavy enough."
Which is probably why. Tom's back has problems.
Because Kerry had come out in interviews and said that he hadn't spoken to Tom since the last show. So that's kind of a relationship that a lot of bands won't admit to.
Yeah.
But I think it happens a lot more than, you know, people think, that they all think all these bands are all, you know, they put their arms around each other. I love you, you love me.
I mean, the early days, you kind of, you spend a lot of time together, but you're also like, you're all eating the same shit sandwich all the time. So it does bond you. But yeah, after you've got success and you've got families as well, and you start to, you know, you get off a tour and you're kind of like, fucking can't stand that guy, and all that kind of goes in. Yeah, I think definitely it's not that like one for all gang anymore.
It's, to me, it's a money thing. And I'm not bitching really that they're doing it, because I'm not surprised.
Yeah,
because they all do it, right? But when you have a band up with a track record like Slayer, I don't think any of their albums ever went platinum,
right?
So they never really got their income, I don't think, from album sales. It's always been on the road.
Yeah,
and you don't tour for 5 years.
Yeah,
I think in the beginning you might say, yeah, I'm done, that's it. And then after a few years, you might have to start tightening your wallet a little bit, because what else is Tom Araya doing,
right,
other than being in Slayer and earning his income from that band?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think they're playing a couple of festival shows.
Mm.
And let's see where it goes from there. But nothing surprises me anymore. And of course, they're going to headline that now, because they've been off the road for 5 years.
Yeah.
If they were still touring, they might have been second or third on that bill. But because it's the return of Slayer, they're going to get up there now and play the couple of shows. And of course, this will lead to probably more shows. And I think part of me feels that Kerry King is rightly pissed about this, because he's spent all this time trying to get his new band up and running,
yep,
and he announces the new band, and then the Slayer thing happens.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, fucking hell, you're taking the shine out of my band.
So now is Kerry King going to open for Slayer?
I don't know, but I heard the song that Kerry brought out.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Slayer.
Yeah.
Which is fine with Mark singing.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Mark's a very good singer. But we'll see where this goes. But once again, nothing surprises me about these bands anymore.
We're going to have, what are they? We're going to have Slayer avatars afterwards. Slavatars. That's what it'll be. Slavatars. That's what it'll be. Slavatars. Yeah.
And again, if you go to the show and you have a great time and they play the songs you want to hear, good for you, but they're 5 years older now.
And there will be, I mean, I think they've always had a probably the world's most rabid fan base. So I think everybody will be, you know, just right in there and you're like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Which is great. And I mean, Tom really doesn't move around much anymore anyway. So I'm sure he could just strap a bass
all and
the
mic
and stand there and sing. And, you know, Gary will still be a maniac. So
of course,
I'm sure the show will be good.
Of course, Kerry King, I think it was brought up before even the Slayer dates were announced. He said Lombardo was dead to him.
Yeah.
So there was no chance of him being on the drum stool
after five years. Which is sad.
Yeah. Who's he playing with now? Is it Mr. Bungle or?
I think so. Yeah,
Mr. Bungle. Yeah. He's
everywhere.
He's the thrash metal partner. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
Or the next one. Juan Crucier. You hear about this?
No, I have not heard about Juan.
So Juan is...
What did Juan do?
Juan is... he's announced shows the other voice of Rat.
Can I raise a practical question at this point?
Yeah.
Are we going to do Stonehenge tomorrow?
No, we're not going to fucking do Stonehenge.
Similar to what Mr. Blotzer did a few years ago.
Is he going to also do the other voice of Dokken too? Is that just to round out his career? Or?
Yeah, so this was announced a couple of days ago.
Is he going to bring Billy Childs in? The other voice of Britney Fox?
The bass player? The bass player. So he put it up on his Facebook page. He's got some dates up.
Granted, he's a talented guy.
The other voice of Rat.
I'm like... Yeah... No.
I think one of the reasons he's doing this is it has to do with the branding and the name.
Yeah.
That band has always been dysfunctional.
Oh, yeah.
They've been, you know, there's been numerous lineup changes. They've been in and out of court.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't surprise me if there was something legal about this where he had to be active playing shows to prove
maybe
something or other with the naming rights, because I don't know who owns the name. I don't know if it's Stephen and Juan and Warren, or because there was that shit show a few years ago as well where Bobby thought he had it, and then you know whatever way they branded it wasn't done right or something, and then Juan got back in on it, and but that band,
I just don't like, who's he have playing with him?
Does it matter?
Well, I would think that
maybe you get Blotzer's band in that one.
As much as people might like Rat, like, so Nicky really likes Rat.
I love him.
But do you like Rat enough that you'd be going, I got to see that one guy again?
No.
You know, it's not like when we went to go see like Jeff Tate, the other voice of Queensryche. Well, that made sense, right? But I just can't, unless he's got some other, to me, again, and this is to me, unless he's got some other thing there to offer, I don't see it. I mean, with a band, he does well, but.
With a band, 99 times out of 100 or 999 times out of 1,000, it's the singer and the guitar player. You name a band with a bass player, you go, fuck, I want to go see him, the bass player.
Right, well. Geddy Lee.
Solo.
Sure. That,
yeah, but that's one.
Right, I know. He said name one. I name one.
Billy Childs.
You know, everyone, I mean, Blemmy, right? If you could still. Yeah, Billy Childs. But I just don't. Granted, talented guy. He was great in Dokken. He, you know, but I don't even know how much he's involved with publishing with all the Rat. I have to go back and look at the credits.
Mm. But I think a lot of this is legal stuff, that he has to be seen as being active.
Maybe. Yeah, you might be onto something there.
Because Stephen is always playing shows.
Yeah.
And I saw Rat a couple of years ago in the Palladium. Were you there?
No.
I don't think you went, right?
No.
So it was Juan, Stephen, Warren, Carlos, Cavazzo, and Jimmy DeGrasso.
Oh.
Right. And they were excellent, right?
Yeah.
And then before that, I saw him in Belfast years ago, and it was Bobby, Warren, Stephen, John Corabi on rhythm guitar,
yeah,
and Robbie Crane.
Right.
So they've always had these revolving lineups with personalities that just clash.
Yeah.
And by all accounts, Warren doesn't need the drama because I think he's got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got some inheritance or something, and he's fine for money.
Yeah.
And the other three guys have been, you know, pushing and pulling at each other for years, and Warren can go, okay, you guys seem okay, I'm in now. And then when it gets a little bit heated, it's like, I don't need this, I'm out.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
and for a lot of times, they're going, like, I would go to see Warren. I've always loved his playing. Pretty inventive, obviously, you know, balanced off really well against Robin, but I always enjoyed Warren's playing. And Stephen, I think Stephen just likes a freaking tour.
Yeah, but he's out playing this catalog. It's not as if the catalog isn't being played.
Yeah.
So you got Stephen, who's playing a fair amount of shows.
Yeah.
And then you got Juan, who's going to go out and do the same material, and he's the bass player. He's not the voice.
Right.
We'll see how it goes, but I think there's legal shit going on about this, but
I mean,
and the promoter is obviously ponied up for this.
It would almost be like if Michael Anthony decided he was going to go tour as the other voice in Van Halen. And the only difference being is that everybody would go, oh yeah, because he's the guy that did all the high harmonies. Like, and he can carry pretty well. I mean, when I saw him last year, with Sammy, and he went out and he did a VH song. He sang the whole thing. He sounded freaking awesome.
Hmm.
But at least there is like that identifiable, if you're a VH fan. Oh yeah. You know, I always can hear Mikey's voice on every single album, but can you really discern Juan's voice in all the gang vocals? I can't.
No, me personally, no.
You know what I mean? Because you'd almost be like, he sang, as at least with like Mikey, you'd go, oh yeah. He's like, you hear him on everything.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on to the next one.
Voice rat.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that one.
Oh.
Alessandro Del Vecchio leaving Frontiers Records. Did you hear that one?
No.
Okay, so for people who don't know.
So then who's going to write all the songs for Frontiers artists?
So for people who don't know, for about over 10 years, he's been the producer, the mixer. He's written for multiple artists on multiple
albums.
Almost
every project that comes out of Frontiers,
right,
he is involved in the songwriting.
A lot of these super group projects that come together, his songwriting credits are all over those.
Yep.
To the point where some of these bands don't even write anything. They're just handed all the music and said, right, here's the songs, play them.
Right. And even, you know, ones where they're, he's going to most likely you might have a guitar player, you know, and maybe a bass player, you know, a vocalist, you know, and you got Alessandro is probably doing the keyboards on it. And like Richie said, he's mixing it, he's producing it. He is, to me, he's always been like Mr. Frontiers.
Yeah. And what the other thing he'd do is you'll get the vocalist who's probably the known guy in the band, say like a Joe Lynn Turner with Sunstorm, or a Robin McCauley, right? They'll record their vocals here in the US, and Alessandro will do everything else with the band in Europe.
They send their stems. He puts
That's the way a lot of these records are done now.
Yep.
So he's leaving the label, and I read the Facebook post that he put up, and he said, you know, it might come as a shock to some people, but he did say that whatever terms and conditions are up now, it didn't agree with him.
Oh, okay.
So he decided, I'm out.
Hmm.
I think he's in some bands that are signed to the label, but he's not the guy now that's going to be writing and producing and mixing all this stuff. Now, I don't know who else they have.
I mean, when I think Frontiers, that's the name that always pops into my head. He's like nobody else.
He's a polarizing guy, and I've spoken to enough musicians who absolutely love the guy.
Right.
But he's polarizing because his fingerprints are everywhere.
Yep.
And that pisses people off because they want the artist that they know,
right,
with name recognition to write the material.
Yep.
They don't want this guy to have his name on everything.
Yeah.
And which I get.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'd say about his track record is he's written some fucking great songs.
He has.
In a format that's pretty restrictive.
Yeah.
To the point where I think I said it to Robin McCauley. Does he have like this boxes and boxes of tapes on
right,
the wall
right.
with no vocals, and he just hands them out to different people saying, you sing on that and you sing on these 10,
right.
you sing on these 10, right? Because he was fucking churning the stuff out.
Oh, yeah.
And with a label like Frontiers, they're very prolific with their releases.
Yeah, they are.
So I don't know how this guy was able to sleep, but he seemed to be able to pull it off. And, you know, you say what you want about the sound of the records and, you know, the perception of them being that they're not in the same room. You know, I've had this thing for years about, you know, chemistry and all that, that if you're sending files over and back, that it's not the same. And it isn't the same.
Correct, it's not.
And that's just the way I feel about it. But he did have some great songs.
Mm-hmm.
He really did. And in a lot of ways, with some of these musicians, you wouldn't hear them now,
yeah,
at all, doing new material if it wasn't for this guy.
Right.
He, giving them the songs to play on and put their stamp on it.
Yeah. So I would see potentially a couple things happening. One is they call his bluff and they give him what he wants. Because if you look at the releases from Frontiers on any given month, the vast majority of them have his involvement. So all of a sudden you are at a huge deficit for producing product by a ton of artists. And he's not easily replaceable. So they either call his bluff and he gets what he wants and he ends up staying there. Or he takes the knowledge he's gained with the time he's been there and he tries his hand at his own label. Now that he's got probably contacts for distro, the name is certainly worth something, and he just does that and he becomes the new competition for them.
Maybe. But maybe he doesn't want to put in all that time. That it was too much time. He just got burned out.
That's possible.
He just
too.
Wants to play in a couple of bands and leave it at that. I think he's got young children and a wife and,
yeah,
you know, and again, like, you'll have to look at the music business now. Is there money in records?
I don't know. Priest did pretty good. There's definitely a lot bigger pickup on physical media these days.
Yeah.
And probably more so even in Europe than here. And I know just which one. It was one of them. One of the releases I got just the other day, and I posted about getting in this blue vinyl version. And it was like, where the fuck did that come from? And it was right off the Frontiers website, if they still have any left. So people liking it. I just don't, like I said, though, he is so involved in a vast majority of stuff. I just can't imagine them not acquiescing to something to keep him there. It's just crazy. I don't know. That would boggle my mind of how they could actually continue to survive with all of that. Because like you said, it's a niche. And I say it in a good way. It's a niche market that they're servicing. And he has been very adept in knowing how to write in a style that one fits the artist that's doing it. So it isn't like you've got, you know, 8 different singers who are all singing to the same essentially same backing track and they have a certain tailor and a fit, and you get a little bit of what you expect from that person. He's not an easy guy to replace.
I think the restrictions actually was one of the reasons he left, because he has alluded to in one or two other posts that he's doing a solo record that's going to be very different to what he's known for.
Yeah.
And I think if you're a musician and you're a writer, and it doesn't matter how prolific you are and how good you are at doing it, if you have a label that's telling you you have to write everything to sound like Journey.
Yeah.
After 10 years, you're going to go, this is fucking boring the shit out of me. As a musician, I want to do something else, and the label won't allow me to do it. So we'll see where he goes. I wish him well. I haven't bought everything that he's written, of course not, because there's just too much of it. But his name is on a lot of albums I have at home.
Yeah.
That I fucking love.
Yeah.
Macaulay's is one.
That's one, yeah.
I've had many musicians tell me how fucking great a guy he is.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't have new product if it wasn't for this guy. So, hey, props to Alessandro.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to follow on with this one. Yeah.
Yeah. The last thing I have is, I don't know if you have an opinion on this, Eric Gronwall leaving Skid Row.
I was wondering if you were going to bring this up. the amicable split?
Yeah. He has been sick the last couple of years. He has missed shows.
Yeah, he has. So, it's interesting. So, this one's definitely, this is like bleeding edge fodder here. As we're doing this, I mean, this was pretty much just announced that he was going to be, he was leaving, he was, actually, he's done. And that Lizzie Hale was going to pick up the remaining live dates. And she's a great performer. I've seen her live, and she can sing really well and stuff. Is she Skid Row singer? No, it's kind of like, when Eddie wanted to maybe have a Van Halen with Patti Smyth.
You have the novelty of it for the four shows, though.
Sings fantastic.
Yeah, she's a good singer.
And powerful vocalist.
Yep.
It was great to see her do a duet with Amy from Evanescence. And it was like, oh, that's freaking fantastic. You know, that was right up there with watching Christina do the duet with Mustaine.
Okay.
On La Toute Le Mans.
Oh, Christina Lacuna Coil.
Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Hunter just looks over and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm hearing it. Like, you know, it's kind of one of those things. But I think there's going to be a lot of fodder around this. And my first thought when I saw this was, a lot of interest lately in Sebastian Bach. He's got that solo album out.
Coming out.
Yeah. I think he's released a single, but
yeah,
he's got that coming out. And already you're getting these, like, are they going, now's the time for Sebastian to go back to reunite with Skid Row. And we're going to hear a lot about this. I guarantee you.
Happens every time.
You know,
it happens even when the other singers are in the band.
But in a lot of cases, he hasn't been as visible. It's kind of been like, oh, wow, Sebastian. Holy fuck, he looks like shit. But in this case, he's been more visible lately.
Yeah, that's because he's doing shows and the new album.
Yeah.
Yeah, timing, eh? I'm sad to see Eric go, because I thought that album, Gang's All Here, was excellent.
Yeah.
Right, really fucking good. Right now,
I have the vinyl.
Yeah, so you had all these people saying, "Oh, no, Sebastian, no, good for you." I just have a different opinion too. I respect your opinion, but I don't agree with it. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, even
I
just of the thought stuff as a was right after he left, when they did some of the punkier stuff.
I just thought as a body of work that the songs on that were really good, really well done, and Nick Raskolnik did a great job producing and mixing it.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's 10 songs. heavy record, songs were good, vocals were very good. I just thought it was well done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not the biggest Skid Row fan in the world anyway. I was never raving over them when they were massive.
Yeah.
I liked them, which is probably why I was never, it's Sebastian or no one, because I didn't have that emotional attachment with that band anyway.
Yeah, but I'm
a bit more objective.
I mean, most people, at least here in the States, you know, they came to know that band with, you know, the first couple of videos that rolled out on MTV. And so, you know, that's kind of where it's been like imprinted that they, you know, they're more likely to say, when you say name a member of Skid Row, they're not going to say, you know, Rob Afuso or Snake, or, you know, they're going to go, oh, Sebastian Bach. And so, yeah, I think he's probably the most closely associated person with the band.
Yeah.
Here in the States.
Yeah, definitely. He's still probably the high-profile guy in the band. But, of course, what you find out over the years, and, of course, I know Sebastian has refuted this, they say Sebastian didn't write any of the songs anyway.
Mm.
So you got the guys that are playing in the band wrote the material.
Yeah.
Now, they don't have the singer. I get it. With Eric, they had a guy I thought that could actually nail that stuff.
Yeah.
Very similar sounding, great singer in his own right.
Yeah.
Sounded great on the record. With Sebastian, all this rumour mill starting again. Here's my take on the Skid Row thing.
Uh-huh.
I have always admired the other three guys tremendously for not going back with Sebastian.
Mm.
Because when all the other bands were going back and giving you the spin bullshit about them being friends and best buddies and all that, when they were only all in it for the money, they still wouldn't do it for the money.
Yeah.
Because they just don't like Sebastian.
There's that. And then, I mean, like,
they just don't want to deal with it at this stage of their career.
As much as they're a hard rock band, like, Rachel Bolan still, like, lives that punk ethic. So it's kind of like, you know, no, fuck you, I'm not doing it. So I think that he's like probably the most unswayable personality in that band.
I think it's gotten close once or twice, but it's just like the minute they start talking, it's like nothing's changed here. No fucking way. I'd rather go out with a different singer and have fun doing it.
Right.
Than go out and do it with Sebastian and have it all fall flat on its face in a week.
I mean, he's always had that, right? When he was playing with the Petrucci's, it was the same thing. It was kind of like, oh, great, you leaving? See ya. Go screw somebody else up. So, great voice, but personality, pain in the ass.
But does he even have the voice now?
Oh, that's a whole other thing. So we'd have to, you can't even tell from the, an album could be auto-tuned to shit, you know?
What do you mean could be?
I mean,
they all are, though, aren't they?
Well, not all of them.
Well, a lot of, Ozzy.
But, you know, reading Tom Werman's book, he had some interesting things to say about a couple of artists. One of them that he talked about actually having to,
I'll have to borrow that off you.
Had to go word by word and pitch the vocals. That's how bad they were.
Vince?
No. No, a female singer.
Do I know her?
Yes, you do. Yeah, and it was, he said, they had to word by word go through. And this is before auto-tune was invented. So they were having to manually pitch these. Yeah, hard rock metal, yeah.
Female singer Tom Werman.
Yeah. So, yeah, great book. Yeah, I'll let you borrow it.
It's not Pat Benatar, is it?
Oh, hell no.
No, I don't know what albums he did with a female singer, Tom Werman.
But it's a good book.
Okay, I'm going to borrow it off you now when I'm done here.
And it's funny because, you know, I think last time we talked to him, he was still operating the inn and stuff.
Long,
so we knew that he
ago.
Was, you know, back in the area and stuff. He's since sold that and he's moved down the street. But I didn't realize, and I wish we had realized last time before we talked to him, was that he grew up in Mass as well. That he just grew up in, not Natick, Wellesley, I think Wellesley. So right in that same area, that probably would have had a lot more engagement there with them. But great book. Yeah, I'll let you borrow that.
Mm-hmm. So anything else of a Skid Row? You think they're going to just get a different singer in and same as usual, move on?
Yeah, I think they'll finish their live dates and then see what they can
Get Juan Crucia.
What they can do.
He can sing.
He can. He can. He will be the voice of Skid Rat. Great idea. Yeah.
That's all I got.
All right. I think, you know, great topics. Metal God smiled upon us this week with all this stuff. A couple of great releases. Another one I want to mention, I commented on X on it as well, that I thought was a really great release. So it's my second favorite so far this year is Firewinds, Stand United.
Haven't got it yet.
Awesome release as well. And so that's right up there with Invincible Shield. So
the Saxon album's really good too. I know that's a little bit older, but it's a very strong record.
It is. I think good stuff, some good shows coming up. Looking forward to hopefully getting into seats at the Scorpion show in Vegas. So if you're out there on the Saturday show, me and Nikki will be out there. And we'll see what else. We're hoping to maybe hit the Metal Blade Museum while we're out there as well. And who knows what else. They have they're doing a raiding the emo vault at the Hard Rock. I want to say the 12th. So it's going to have people from like Marilyn Manson and Adelita's Way. And
what day of the week are you going there?
So I'm flying out the 11th.
What, you don't know what day of the week, do you?
Wednesday.
Don't they have that thing? Is it in Vamp that Chuck Wright?
Maybe.
MCs. Is that in Vegas?
Yeah, I think so.
I think they get all these musicians in the area. They come and they jam.
We might be like...
I don't even know if they still do it.
Spent by Wednesday night because we're flying out really early. And then we got the show Saturday. I think we come back Monday or Tuesday.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe we fly out Thursday. I don't know. Whatever the 11th is. But yeah, so looking forward to it. Should be hopefully fun. We'll see.
Okay. Pretty good.
Anyways, that's it for this week. There ain't no more. Stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself and
Richie,
have yourselves a great meta week. And until we talk to you again, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.